Hello, everyone, and welcome to the National Geographic Society program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. I'll be reading articles published in March of 2026 by the Geographic Society. So I hope you enjoy the program. I don't know where all of you were that fateful day on July 20th when Neil Armstrong first set foot on the moon. I can tell you I was glued to the television set, not believing anything I was watching. Some of you were probably not even born yet. The first article concerns that heroic effort. The title was What Apollo 11 Astronauts Actually Said When They Got to the Moon. The story was originally published in the December 1969 issue of National Geographic, and there's an introduction that was published in March of 2026. The article rediscovers the famous words exchanged between astronauts Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, and Michael Collins during the first moon landing. The talk was weighted with cryptic exchanges of scientific data, but still it rang with the stupendous drama of the greatest achievement in the history of exploration. For these were the voices of Apollo 11, voices carrying over nearly a quarter of a million miles to tell of man's first steps on the moon. The world listened as Neil Armstrong, Edwin Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins spoke to each other and to Capcom, the capsule communicator in Houston. And as Eagle, the lunar module, separated from Columbia, the command module, and touched down in the dust of that desolate, windless world on July 20th at 4:17 and 43 seconds p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 102 hours, 45 minutes, and 43 seconds after launch, this, in part, was what was said. Armstrong, Houston, Tranquility Base here, the Eagle has landed. Capcom, astronaut Charles M. Duke. Roger, Tranquility, we copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again, thanks a lot. Collins, in Columbia. Fantastic. Armstrong, Houston, that may have seemed like a very long final phase. The auto-targeting was taking us right into a crater with a large number of big boulders and rocks, and it required flying manually over the rock field to find a reasonably good area. Capcom, Roger, we copy. It was beautiful from here. Tranquility, over. Aldrin, we'll get to the details of what's around here, but it looks like a collection of just about every variety of shape, angularity, granularity, about every variety of rock. The colors, well, there doesn't appear to be too much of a general color at all. However, it looks as though some of the rocks and boulders are going to have some interesting colors to them. Over. Capcom. Raj. Tranquility. Be advised there are a lot of smiling faces in this room and all over the world. Over. Armstrong. There are two of them up here. Collins. And don't forget one in the command module. And thanks for putting me on relay, Houston. I was missing all the action. Capcom, Raj, Columbia, say something. They ought to be able to hear you. Collins, Roger, Tranquility Base, it sure sounded great from up here. You guys did a fantastic job. Armstrong, thank you. Just keep that orbiting base ready for us up there now. Capcom, Tranquility Base, Houston. All your consumables are solid. Normal consumptions of fuel and oxygen. You're looking good in every respect. Everything is copacetic. Over. Armstrong, you might be interested to know that I don't think we noticed any difficulty at all in adapting to 1/6 G, at least immediately natural to move in this environment. Capcom, Roger, Tranquility, we copy. Over. Armstrong, outside the window is a relatively level plain, cratered with a fairly large number of craters of the 5 to 50 foot variety, and some ridges, small, 20-30 feet high, I would guess, and literally thousands of little 1 and 2 foot craters around the area. We see some angular blocks out several hundred feet in front of us that are probably 2 feet in size and have angular edges. There is a hill in view just ahead of us, difficult to estimate, but might be a half a mile or a mile. Collins, sounds like it looks a lot better now than it did yesterday at that very low sun angle. It looked rough as a cob then. Aldrin, I'd like to take this opportunity to ask every person listening in, whoever and wherever they may be, to pause for a moment and contemplate the events of the past few hours, and to give thanks in his or her own way. Over. This next part is not a part of their conversations. The astronauts begin preparations to leave the LM, first having made a detailed check of their craft to make sure all is in order for eventual liftoff. Armstrong will be the first out, about 6.5 hours after the landing. Now back to the conversation. Armstrong, the hatch is coming open. Aldrin, Neil, you're lined up nicely. Toward me a little bit. Okay, down. Armstrong, how am I doing? Aldrin, you're doing fine. Armstrong, okay, Houston, I'm on the porch. Capcom, and it's now astronaut Bruce McCandless, man, we're getting a picture on the TV. Aldrin, oh, you got a good picture, huh? Capcom, there's a great deal of contrast in it, and currently it's upside down on our monitor, but we can make out a fair amount of detail. Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now. Armstrong, I'm at the foot of the ladder. The LM, that's the lunar module, foot pads are only depressed in the surface, about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Now and then it's very fine. I'm going to step off the LM now. That's one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. The next sentence is not a part of the communication. The television camera on the LM records Armstrong's first movements through the moon's dark shadows and blinding sunlight. And back to the conversation. Armstrong, the surface is fine and powdery. I can pick it up loosely with my toe. It does adhere in fine layers, like powdered charcoal, to the sole and sides of my boots. I only go in a small fraction of an inch, maybe 1/8 of an inch, but I can see the footprints of my boots and the treads in the fine, sandy particles. Capcom, Neil, this is Houston. We're copying. Armstrong, there seems to be no difficulty in moving around. As we suspected, it's even perhaps easier than the simulations at 1/6 G that we performed on the ground. It's actually no trouble to walk around. The descent engine did not leave a crater of any size. We're essentially on a very level place here. I can see some evidence of rays emanating from the descent engine, but very insignificant amount. Okay, Buzz, we're ready to bring down the camera. Aldrin, I'm all ready. Armstrong, okay, it's quite dark here in the shadow, and a little hard for me to see that I have good footing. I'll work my way over into the sunlight here without looking directly into the sun. Aldrin, okay, going to get the contingency sample now, Neil? Armstrong, this is very interesting. It's a very soft surface, but here and there where I plug with the contingency sample collector, I run into a very hard surface, but it appears to be very cohesive material of the same sort. I'll try to get a rock in here. Here's a couple. Aldrin, that looks beautiful from here, Neil. Armstrong, it has a stark beauty all its own. It's like much of the high desert of the United States. It's different, but it's very pretty out here. Aldrin, are you ready for me to come out? Armstrong, all set. Okay, you saw what difficulties I was having. I'll try to watch your PLSS, that stands for Portable Life Support System, from underneath here. Aldrin, now I want to back up and partially close the hatch, making sure not to lock it. Armstrong, a particularly good thought. Aldrin, that's our home for the next couple of hours, and we want to take good care of it. That's a simple matter to hop down from one step to the next. Armstrong, there you go. Aldrin, beautiful view. Armstrong, isn't that something? Magnificent sight out here, isn't it fun? Aldrin, the rocks are rather slippery. Have to be careful that you are leaning in the direction you want to go. You have to cross your foot over to stay underneath where your center of mass is. And Neil, didn't I say we might see some purple rocks? Armstrong, find a purple rock? Aldrin, yep. Very small, sparkly. Armstrong, for those who haven't read the plaque, we'll read the plaque that's on the front landing gear of this LM. First, there's two hemispheres, one showing each of the two hemispheres of Earth. Underneath it says, here, men from the planet Earth first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 AD. We came in peace, for all mankind. It has the crew member's signature and the signature of the President of the United States. Collins, this is history. Capcom, Roger, I believe they are setting up the flag now. Collins, great. Capcom, I guess you're about the only person around that doesn't have TV coverage. Collins, that's right, that's all right, I don't mind a bit. How is the quality of the TV? Capcom, oh, it's beautiful, Mike, really is. Collins, oh gee, that's great. Is the lighting halfway decent? Capcom, yes indeed. They've got the flag up now and you can see the stars and stripes on the lunar surface. Collins, beautiful, just beautiful. Aldrin, you do have to be rather careful to keep track of where your center of mass is. Sometimes it takes about two or three paces to make sure that you've got your feet underneath you. Capcom, Neil and Buzz, the President of the United States, is in his office now and would like to say a few words to you. Over. Armstrong, that would be an honor. Capcom, go ahead, Mr. President. President Nixon, hello, Neil and Buzz. I am talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House, and this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made from the White House. I just can't tell you how proud we all are of what you have done. For every American, this has to be the proudest day of our lives, and for people all over the world, I am sure they, too, join with Americans in recognizing what an immense feat this is. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become part of man's world, and as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth. for one priceless moment in the whole history of man, all the people on this earth are truly one. One in their pride in what you have done, and one in our prayers that you will return safely to earth. Armstrong, thank you, Mr. President. It's a great honor and privilege for us to be here, representing not only the United States, but men of peace of all nations, and with interest and a curiosity and a vision for the future. It's an honor for us to be able to participate here today. Aldrin, how's the bulk sample coming, Neil? Armstrong, bulk sample is sealed. Aldrin, Houston, the passive seismometer has been deployed manually. Armstrong, these boulders look like basalt, and they probably have 2% white minerals in them. Again, this is not part of the conversation. Armstrong has been on the surface of the moon nearly 2 hours now. The astronauts have devoted most of their time to setting up scientific instruments and taking samples of moon material. Houston advises them that they have about 10 minutes left before beginning preparations to re-enter the LM. Aldrin, collecting a core sample. I hope you're watching how hard I have to hit this into the ground to the tune of about 5 inches. It almost looks wet. Capcom, Buzz, this is Houston. It's about time for you to start your EVA, that's extravehicular activity, closeout activities. Armstrong, I'm picking up several pieces of rather vesicular rock out here now. Capcom, Roger, Neil, and Buzz, let's press on. We're running a little low on time. Aldrin, I'll head on up the ladder. Adios, amigos. Again, not part of the conversation, just as he was the first to step onto the moon, Neil Armstrong is the last to step off. After loading about 50 pounds of rock and soil in the LM by means of a rope and pulley hoist, he climbs up the ladder. Aldrin guides him through the hatch. Aldrin, now start arching your back. That's good. Plenty of room. Armstrong, thank you. I'm bumping now. Aldrin, now you're clear. You're rubbing up against me a little bit. Now move your foot and I'll get the hatch. The hatch is closed and latched. Capcom, the crew of Tranquility Base is back inside their base. Everything went beautifully. Collins, hallelujah. Armstrong, Houston, Tranquility Base, repress, that's repressurization, complete. Capcom, Roger, Tranquility, we observed your equipment jettison on TV, and the PASIC seismic experiment reported shocks when each PLSS hit the surface. Over. Armstrong, you can't get away with anything anymore, can you? Capcom, we would like to say from all of us down here in Houston, and really from all of us in all the countries and in the entire world, we think that you have done a magnificent job up there today. Over. Aldrin, thank you very much. It has been a long day. Capcom, yes, indeed. Get some rest there. Aldrin, Houston, Tranquility, have you had enough TV for today? Capcom, Tranquility, this is Houston. Yes, indeed. A mighty fine presentation. Aldrin, okay, signing off. See you tomorrow. Again, off of the conversation, it is nearly 12 hours since Eagle's landing, when the television camera on the moon stops transmitting. Armstrong and Aldrin rest before the critical liftoff. If the engine fails to ignite, there will be no return to Earth for the two astronauts. Houston announces that ignition is 2 minutes away. And then, Aldrin, that was beautiful. 36 feet per second up. Very smooth. Very quiet ride. There's that one crater down there. Capcom, This is now astronaut Ronald Evans. Eagle, Houston, 1 minute and you're looking good. Aldrin, 150 up, beautiful. Capcom, you are go, everything is looking good. Armstrong, I'm going right down US 1. Off the conversation, what remains now is Eagle's docking with Columbia, the 60-hour ride back to Earth, and the searing re-entry. The spacecraft came together only to be gripped in a moment of unexpected motion. Collins, that was a funny one. Did it appear that you were jerking around quite a bit during the retract cycle? Armstrong, yeah, it seemed to happen at the time I put the plus X upward thrust to it. Collins, yeah, I was sure busy there for a couple of seconds. Capcom, you're looking great. It's been a mighty fine day. Collins, boy, you're not kidding. And that completes the article. The title was What Apollo 11 Astronauts Actually Said When They Got to the Moon. And this story featured Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, and Michael Collins. And now, coming back down to Earth with this article, these nest cams offer a rare glimpse of bald eagles and their hatchlings, by Bethany Brookshire. It's easy to think of bald eagles as solitary, rugged individualists. We picture their harsh cries as they soar, silhouetted against a perfect blue sky. We envision those hooked beaks belonging to expert hunters, with a piercing eye and noble dignity. While they might hunt alone, bald eagles are surprisingly social birds. During breeding, a monogamous pair work together to raise young. And when not breeding, birds of a feather with roost together, hanging out near each other in trees, that can host hundreds of the huge predators. There are plenty of nest cams out there to see eagle parenting in action, but when the eagles come home to roost, you might have to search in person. Nest versus roost. Children's storybooks would have you believe that birds go home to a nest. That's only true if the birds in question are parents, explains Brian Watts, a bird ecologist at William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. A nest is a structure where birds produce young. But most wild birds aren't laying eggs and raising young all year round. Instead, home for the night is the place where they land at the end of the day. Many birds prefer to spend their nights in the company of other birds of their species. This gathering of individuals is called a roost. Eagles are really social animals, Watts says. They look for other individuals. The biggest roosts can host up to 100 bald eagles, all gathering for the evening in just a few trees. Some roosts are ephemeral, such as a flock of eagles attracted by a fish kill for several days. Others, near more permanent food sources, have been recorded for centuries. Because they are, and because roosts are so dependent on food, they can also vary by season. In spring and summer, most of an eagle's diet is fish. But in fall and winter, the water temperatures drop, the fish go deeper, Watts says. Eagles will switch over to waterfowl or head upland to scavenge anything from dead deer to a landfill. The birds tend to settle where they have access to the top of the forest canopy and the open air. During the breeding season in winter and spring, some bald eagles will pair off to mate, build nests, and guard a territory while they raise their young. In general, eagles mate for life, though like humans they can divorce, and both male and female eagles have been known to be unfaithful from time to time. But it takes two to parent, and a pair will always work together to build their nest. Bald eagles build the largest tree nests in the world and birds will return to them year after year. As with roosts, they prefer taller trees that give them space to launch their massive wingspans. Each nest takes 1 to 3 months to become move-in ready. Using only feet and beaks, they weave sticks together and fill in cracks with grass or moss, making a massive structure 5 to 6 feet across and 2 to 4 feet high. Pity the tree they choose. The massive nests can weigh more than a ton. Eagle pairs can come back over and over, adding another foot or two of material to their nest each year. Even once the young are out of the nest, the parents will return throughout the summer, adding greenery to the nest, potentially to keep the nest clean and let other eagles know that the nest is taken. Even once the young are out of the nest, the parents will return throughout the summer, adding greenery to the nest, potentially to keep the nest clean and let other eagles know that the nest is taken. And with that, we have run out of time today. The name of this article was "These Nest Cams Offer a Rare Glimpse of Bald Eagles and Their Hatchlings" by Bethany Brookshire. And that does complete the broadcast today. You've been listening to the National Geographic Society program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your volunteer reader. I hope you enjoyed the program today. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week. Keep listening to the premium programming offered by Sun Sounds of Arizona. And thank you so much for spending your time with me today.